Hello, I am Randy Andrews, and today I'll be talking about The Neverending Story from 1983. I'll discuss the cast, the background, the effects, and of course, the soundtrack, all today on Soundtrack Alley. Today, I'm getting us into the movie The Neverending Story. First, let's talk a little bit about the cast.
Now I see why you picked this camp.
Oh no!
Delicious-looking limestone rock. Nice bouquet. Must be a real vintage year.
Yes, you're right. Those delicious rocks are the reason we camped here, all right?
Noah Hathaway was hurt twice during the making of the movie. During his horse-riding training, he was thrown off a horse, which then stepped on him. Then during the shooting of the drowning sequence in the Swamp of Sadness, his leg got caught on the elevator and he was pulled underwater. He was unconscious by the time he was brought to the surface. He also almost lost an eye during the fight scene versus the Gamork. One of the claws of his giant paws poked him in the face. The robot was also so heavy that he lost his breath as well when he hit the ground by it. They only made one shot due to the risk that he would get seriously wounded by the robot. The Knight Hob says a profanity in the opening scene where the Rockbiter appears running down all in its path. This profanity is often dubbed over by the grumble of the Rockbiter's scooter, so that it can be shown as a children's film. The film itself actually ends about halfway through the book, and picks up with the second movie. This film was also the most expensive film ever to be produced in Germany at the time. Noah Hathaway, he now owns and operates a tattoo parlor in Los Angeles, California, with his wife. And the author, Michael Ende, decided that he was unhappy with the film's version of his story and refused to have his name placed in the opening credits. A small credit appears at the end with his name, and he also asked if the movie title would be changed or canceled. After the studio declined both options, he filed a lawsuit and ultimately lost. Now, one of the things the makeup team did on the movie was try to paint Noah Hathaway green, just as Atreyu is in the book. It wasn't believable, and he said, "I looked like a fungi." Also, Tammy Stronach was attending theater classes in San Francisco when she got the audition to be the childlike empress. Her acting teacher was friends with the production executive and talent scout Anna Gross. Tammy initially believed she was auditioning for a little play and had no idea it was to be for a major motion picture. Now, let's get into a little bit of the technical aspects on the film.
Are you Mola?
The Ancient One?
Not that it matters, but yes.
Please help me, Mauler. Do you recognize this?
Well, we haven't seen the Auron in a long time.
It was really interesting because one of the rides that's found in Germany was to be able to ride on Falkor's back. And it was on location in the Bavaria Filmplatz in Munich, Germany. And according to the book, the name that Bastian screams almost indecipherably into the night is Moonchild. But it has often been debated what Barrett Oliver actually says. You would probably have to have subtitles on just to figure it out. One of the interesting things about it is that Tammy Stronach lost both front teeth shortly before filming, and they had to make her fake teeth, which caused her to lisp until she learned to compensate for them. And she also was the youngest in the film cast. Falkor is actually a 43-foot-long motorized creature with 6,000 plastic scales and pink feather fur. His head is actually 3 feet tall and long, and has a long tongue in the mouth. Now, this was really interesting that most of the film was shot in Germany, and it was in the summer of 1983, and it was Germany's hottest summer in 25 years. And at the time of the release, it was the most expensive film produced outside the United States and the Soviet Union. According to the filmmakers, the rolling storm clouds were not meant to actually be the nothing, but rather an indication of its presence, as the nothing is an invisible force. Contrary to internet rumor, the horse did not really die during the filming of the Swamp of Sadness scene. As confirmed by German magazine interview with Noah Hathaway, shortly after the movie, and in the years since at conventions, the horse was given to Noah at the end of filming, but due to the cost of transportation, need for quarantine and sterilization, the horse was left behind in Germany. There were two scenes from the book that were written in the script, but ultimately scrapped due to special effects limitations. The first was the initial appearance of Falkor, where Atreyu rescues him from Yggdrasil the Many, a swarm of poisonous wasps taking the form of a giant spider. This is where Bastian's scream, being heard by the characters in the book, was to have taken place, and also explained why Atreyu and Falkor are later seen being given medicine by the gnomes. The second scene cut was involving Atreyu and Falkor, and they encountered the wind giants. These giant creatures made of clouds, and being caught in a fight between them. It was re-edited into their close encounter with the nothing before Atreyu falls into the sea. Now, Noah Hathaway was due to appear in the Broadway show Chaplin alongside Gene Kelly and Anne Margaret, but opted to do The Neverending Story instead. He had been cast in the film, then the original director was fired, and when Wolfgang Petersen was hired, Noah was immediately rehired. Now, another thing I didn't realize was that Deep Roy was in this film, and then his voice was dubbed in the movie. The theme song that was sung by Lommel, who was the lead singer for the pop band Kaja Gugu, when the show plays the music video, depending on their fame in the country, the performance credit goes either to Lommel or Kaja Gugu. The childlike empress was just childlike. She has existed for as long as there have been stories to tell. She was portrayed by Iranian-born Israeli-American dancer Tammy Stronach, who was only 11 years old when the production started. Almost 5 million Germans watched the film during its initial release, a rare feat for a German production. The scenes set in the real world, which was Bastian's home, the city, the school, it was shot not at Bavaria Studios in Munich, Germany, but in Vancouver, Canada. According to an article released by Der Spiegel in 1984, writer Michael Ende had hoped for this film to be directed either by Andrei Waja or Akira Kurosawa, which would make it a far more fantastical movie. The name of the mystical land in the English translation of the original novel was Fantastica. Not Fantasia, but the original German name, Fantasien, translates more accurately into English as Fantasia. During filming in Germany, because it was an unusually hot summer, one of the statues of the Ivory Tower actually melted. On other days, the crew were forced to shut down production because the blue backgrounds for the mat work refused to operate properly, which is sad. The German version was not what would feature the theme song, nor the pop, techno-pop elements composed by Giorgio Moroder. It only features the orchestral score composed by Klaus Dollinger, which is a really unique score. Atreyu is a unique ancient word which means bold guardian. Gerald McRaney, who played a role of Bastian's father, is best known in his title role on the popular sitcom TV show Major Dad. Now also, the metalcore band Atreyu, they took their namesake from the film's character in question. And many other people love that name. One of the poet writers, J.R. Gabriel's favorite childhood movie was this film, and after leaving upstate New York to live in Arizona, the movie provided inspiration toward Gabriel becoming a professional writer, which is really cool. There, of course, are two other film sequels that were later made, one of them with the late Jonathan Brandis on Sequest, and then as Bastian, also, I mean, he was as Bastian in The Neverending Story, too. Let's talk a little bit about the puppetry and muppetry of The Neverending Story.
I was trying to
sneak away.
Yeah. I mean, no, no.
I like children.
For breakfast?
Never. I'm a luck dragon. My name is Falcor.
And my name is...
Atreyu. And you're on a quest.
How'd you know that?
You were unconscious. And you talked in your sleep.
30 years ago, technology in film was limited to early iterations of the green screen. Dark Crystal, Return to Oz, Labyrinth, and while each found a unique magic in their cast of handcrafted puppets, none had the staying power of The Neverending Story. According to Wolfgang Peterson, he said it was really only blue screen then. It wasn't even called green screen yet, and that was all we had. These days, of course, computer-generated images have advanced so far that we question whether humans have become necessary for a box office smash. He also said, well, actually, perfection can close everything off. It pressures you to roll right over you. Visual effects were incorporated for the flying sequences in Neverending Story, but nearly every other aspect was man-made, and the result of weeks and weeks of training, each of the puppets required a team of puppeteers who mastered intricate coordination prior to production. Now, Peterson recalled a team of about 25 behind Falcor, with multiple people assigned to facial expressions alone. One person was responsible for operating Falcor's nose, one for the eyebrows, one for the upper lip, one for the lower lip, Peterson said. And you cannot imagine, it was just unbelievably ridiculous to watch it from the outside. He remembered seeing the process in action and the magic that came into being when the mechanicals behind the puppets were out of sight. They would record the creatures' voices in advance, and much of the work was spent syncing up movements with words. Although, there was always something off, an eyebrow out of place, or the dialogue not quite lining up. Even with practice, it was impossible to shake human error. The challenge, however, Peterson said, always felt that it gave it a sense of being a true art. And he had said, perfection can close everything off, as I mentioned earlier. And he said, it feels like art because you feel the human beings behind it and not the technology behind it. This sort of humanity behind this very simple technique. And it's interesting that it still works 30 years later. Now, with the lack of CGI production, it proved helpful for a cast that predominantly ordered off the children's menu at the time of production. A massive amount of energy went into finding the right kids. Peterson saw more than 3,000 actresses before finding the childlike Empress in Tammy Stronach. Once he managed to get Stronach, Bastion, or Barrett Oliver, and Atreyu, Noah Hathaway, was on set, the task of interacting with the creatures proved much easier than it might have been were they the product of a then blue screen. There were also far too many characters in the novel to include in the film. Actors now often complain they have nothing on stage to work with, and they have to imagine everything. This was not how it was back then. The creatures were there, and they were talking to them. They felt alive, and it made it easier, and also it added a warmness and a humanity. And Peterson said, I didn't have to say, look, Atreyu, you are here, and there's a rock biter coming toward you. If there was a rock biter coming his way, the rock biter was actually coming his way. Another reason Peterson says the never-ending story feels like art more so than modern blockbusters with the non-human creatures is because the artists were part of the creation. With the design process split amongst Italian artists, the production designer, and the professional mime behind, say, E.T., Peterson and his team set about selecting what creatures to use from Michael Ende's novel. And there were just so much work that needed to go into some of the puppets. Now, cutting down the supernatural cast wasn't the only change Peterson made, but also End was notoriously infuriated by the transition. And in 1984, he held a press conference specifically to distance himself from that revolting movie. And a lot of people thought Michael Ende was a saint. That's how big that book was. And I think it was a little bit to his head. Like, he really thought, maybe I'm Jesus, I don't know. And Peterson, he laughed about this because he had come off dealing with a similar issue with the author to the book, which was Das Boot. And ultimately, neither writer understood what was required in the shift to a new medium. And you have to make it more international for a worldwide audience. It's big, expensive, and you have to simplify things and cut characters. But also, the style of it could not be too dark. You need a big, wide audience. It wasn't a Disney movie, but we wanted to go with a direction of a big-time family entertainment. And Michael Ende didn't get that idea at all, which was surprising. Sure, it had its very dark and scary moments, but life is like that. And the original book fulfills the name The Neverending Story in that it its formatting allows for it to be read in an infinite loop, which includes a loss of self in the imaginative world and non-ending that is certainly less simple and happy than using one's dragon riding abilities to get back to the school bullies. Yet, while there was big box office intentions for the NeverEnding Story, it did manage to juggle a certain darkness, which the audience, terrified by Atreyu's battle with the Gamork and the passage through the Riddle Gate, will definitely remember. And that's something that truly is unique about the movie, because I certainly remember those scenes, and the Gamork certainly terrified me.
Don't you know anything about Fantasia? It's the world of human fantasy. Every part, every creature of it, is a piece of the dreams and hopes of mankind. Therefore, it has no boundary.
But why is Fantasia dying then?
Because people have begun to lose their hopes and forget their dreams. So the nothing grows stronger.
What is the nothing?
It's the emptiness that's left. It is like a despair destroying this world. And I have been trying to help it.
But why?
Because people who have no hopes are easy to control. And whoever has the control has the power.
Who are you, really?
I am the servant of the power behind the nothing. I was sent to kill the only one who could have stopped the nothing. I lost him in the swamps of sadness. His name was Atreyu.
Another thing it says is that Peterson had said it has a very dark and scary moments, and it educates you and a reader like Bastion how to go through that and pass these sort of dark moments to achieve something in the end. And I think it empowers kids, as even the childlike Empress says in that goosebumpy moment at the end of the film, "Do what you want." And asked whether he would ever endeavor to make another NeverEnding Story, Peterson debated what the film might look like today. And he remembered that there was a NeverEnding Story 2, and he said he never saw it and heard it wasn't very good. And so if it ever came to be, this would be the return to the NeverEnding Story based on the second half of N's book. Yet Peterson knew he was not only the only one to have access to it, but was obligated to use the 3 decades worth of updates that have emerged since the release of his cult classic. He said, "We would have to do it in today's technique. The challenge becomes whether we could find a way to get it as an interesting and charming and human and warm as we were able to do so 30 years ago. Now, let's get into the soundtrack portion of our show.
He doesn't understand that he's the one who has the power to stop it. He simply can't imagine that one little boy could be that important.
Is it really me? Maybe he doesn't know what he has to do!
What do I have to do?
He has to give me a new name. He's already chosen it. He just has to call it out.
But it's only a story. It's not real. It's only a story.
Atreyu, no! Atreyu!
The soundtrack, of course, for The Neverending Story, which was Wolfgang Petersen's film adaptation of this child fantasy, was divided into two parts. The first consists of keyboard and electronic guitar compositions by synth wizard Giorgio Moroder, who contributed much to the electronic music used by Hollywood in the 1980s. The second half is more traditional orchestral score by German composer Klaus Doldinger, although Moroder's side of the record includes his charming, fanciful theme song, The Neverending Story, performed by pop star Le Mans. Doldinger's side is ultimately the more winning, with the exception of The Ivory Tower, an exuberantly muscular piece that was used as the B-side of the 7-inch single for Le Mans' song. Moroder seems to have been stuck with the task of scoring the darker, more melancholy scenes in the movie, as indicated by the track titles like The Swamp of Sadness and Ruined Landscape. And in contrast, Doldinger gets to score the pieces like Bastion's Happy Flight, Fantasia, and Atreyu's Quest. Consequently, the first side of the record is characterized by murky solemnity, while the second is largely soaring and energetic. The dichotomy is appropriate for the film that alternates between exhilaration of a young boy's adventure and the despair of a kingdom facing total annihilation. But the sequencing made for a difficult listen. The soundtrack might be more enjoyable if the film's musical highs and lows had been better integrated. Now I'll be playing a few film cues from the movie. First, I'll be playing The Ivory Tower, The Swamp of Sadness, The Gomork, and Ruined Landscape. You get the illustrious feeling of The Ivory Tower in this piece, and yet also we get the dark feelings of sadness, to coin the term, in the demise of Atreyu's horse. The Gomork cue is short, but very effective for what it is, and he is quite terrifying. So now, I'll play those cues. We'll be right back. Next, I've got Atreyu meets Falcor, Atreyu's Quest, Sleepy Dragon, and Fantasia. These really heighten Doldinger's musical themes more and give us these elements of a fantasy world. I hope you enjoy them.
Thank you.
Sadly, we've come down to another end of Soundtrack Alley. I hope you found it enjoyable. These last cues are short, but wonderful. I have Mirror Gate, Southern Oracle, Moonchild, and Bastion's Happy Flight. You have to understand that this movie only encompasses the first half of the book, and the sequel movie doesn't carry the correct fantasy elements through it. However, the music is really gorgeous and orchestral and gives us this happy ending for the film when the book is kind of dark and grimacing. So you can find me at soundtrackalley.net, soundtrackalley.podbean.com, and you can email me at soundtrackalley@yahoo.com. You can find me on Facebook at Soundtrack Alley and follow me on Twitter at RandallAndrews1. So until next time, enjoy these cues and happy listening. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. I hope you take the time to review my podcast on iTunes or even listen to it on Podbean. With your review, it helps me get noticed on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley Spotlight. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Also, if you want to leave a comment, question, or concern, please email me at soundtrackalley@gmail.com and enjoy looking at my blog at soundtrackalley.com.